Oh, crap.
The moment when it hits the fan. I'm Meredith Hartley.
I'm Frank Hutchison.
And you're listening to Oh Crap, the Crisis Management Podcast, helping you survive your Oh Crap moments in business and in life. Brought to you by Me Squared. You can learn more at our website, www.me2-solutions.com. That's www.me2-solutions.com. Hey everyone, welcome back. We're continuing our conversation about the Cheerios recall and gluten-free food testing and really sample size and testing in general for safety. Now, Frank, we've discussed a lot about what was wrong with how Cheerios is testing, or at least what our concerns are about the risks of the process. But let's talk about, especially with our experience of quality management and statistical control, what would a good testing process look like?
Well, you just mentioned one of the keys that you would use, and that would be statistical process control, which is a very well-known system used to identify whether or not your process is in control, meaning that it produces reproducible, predictable results.
Yes. It doesn't mean there won't be mistakes or anomalies.
No, but it tells you kind of like when they might occur, or if they do occur, you can identify them very early.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was used, for example, in World War II. The American artillery shells had a bad habit early in the war of detonating prematurely.
Mm-hmm.
And this made the artillery people kind of antsy. They didn't want to fire their guns because they might blow up in their face.
Right.
Well, statistical process control was used to be able to improve the manufacturing process so you had fewer defectives.
Okay, let's talk about what that means. What are we talking about? What does it look like when you're doing statistical process?
The process involves you, first of all, running the process. And every time you do a certain lot size, and you get to determine what the lot size is.
And a lot is just a group of products you made on the same equipment, the same place.
Same
it's
time.
Unified somehow.
Yes. Natural grouping. And what you do is you'll take a sample size from that, a few pieces, and you measure them, and you find out what the average of the measurement is, and also the range, which is the smallest to the largest.
Yes.
Because those two pieces of information are important. And then that will be plotted on two graphs where you can see over time if the mean of the sample size changes significantly.
That's the average.
That's the average. Or the range changes significantly. In statistical process control, we have what we call control limits. And this tells us that from the history, the measurements that you've taken, you can then calculate these control limits. And that will tell you where you should expect to have 99.73% of all your data points should fall within those control limits, which is pretty darn good. Although, I will also say that empirical evidence seems to indicate that most profitable processes have to be better than what we call 3 sigma.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be better than 99.973%.
For those of you who aren't big statistics buffs, that's just a measure of accuracy. It's saying, are the majority of our results close to where we expect them to be or not? And really it's a way of quantifying that and saying, yes, this many of our results are that close. This many are. And you want to get as many as possible as close to the goal as possible.
Basically, if everything is in control, you'll have only one out of every 400 samples be outside the control limit.
So if we're talking about, for instance, gluten-free testing here, what we're saying is that, well, yes, 20 parts per million is the goal of gluten. I mean, that's the upper limit of safety for gluten-free testing.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want all of our results to be 19.
Okay? Well, it depends on what the dispersion is.
Right, but go with me here, okay? So what we're saying is that our goal, usually based off of a test, is you want it as low as possible. So our goal might be 10 parts per million. In fact, Cheerios said that their goal was 10 to 13 parts per million for their average, is what they wanted here. So that was the goal. They wanted things to be as close to that as possible. And, I mean, that's an excellent goal to have.
Yes.
Because you don't want things varying so much that you can't predict. If a lot of your readings are coming in close to that limit of 20 parts per million, there's a higher risk that you could cross that line.
Yes.
So you set your goal low enough to have some variation.
Well, that's the other part, the range that you have.
Yep.
Because if you have a sample, it's saying, like, in their case, they took 12 to 18, and if the average was 13, but the range was, say, 20, that means you could have anything from 3 mm-hmm. to 23. Well, 23 isn't within your
right
good range.
And that's come up. As we discussed earlier, Trisha Thompson of glutenfreewatchdog.org, when she toured, the results that she was shown from their validation phase, which is when they're still testing things out, but it ranged everywhere from, I mean, the majority of results were extremely low, all the way up to one reading that was 90 parts per million, four times the legal limit.
And let's assume just for a moment that that one was, okay, that was out there. All the rest were within the limit. What effect does that have?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you assume that just one out of every 18 is above the limit, what does that mean for the average celiac person?
Mm-hmm.
Now, my granddaughter, she eats Cheerios. Say she eats one box.
She did eat Cheerios.
Okay. Well, let's say that she's eating Cheerios. She eats a box of Cheerios every month. If only one out of 18 boxes is above the 20 parts per million limit, that means that the likelihood that she'll have a box of Cheerios that has too much gluten in it is 50% in a year.
So her first time, I mean, we're talking maybe a 1 in 20 chance.
It'd be 94% that it's going to be gluten-free.
Okay, there we go. But this happens over and over and over again.
And by the time you go through 12 boxes, mm-hmm. the chance that she's going to have gluten is 50-50.
And that's one of the reasons we get so concerned about this. I mean, for instance, my daughter eats certified gluten-free oats almost every single morning as her breakfast. She loves oatmeal. And she's never once been glutened or had a bad reaction to these oats that mm-hmm. she has been eating for at least 2 years now, because they're certified gluten-free. There is a much lower variation. There's a much lower risk because of all the safeties in the process and the extreme testing it's put through. But with Cheerios, even though it can technically meet, it's found a way to technically meet that level,
yes.
the risk is higher for all of us over time. So we're not just talking about the one time you eat it, what your risk is. That risk multiplies.
Over and over and over again.
So how do we create a process that prevents that?
That is where you have your quality management system. A management system that you have in place to make sure that, first of all, what you're doing in your process, one, is known, it has to be documented,
mm-hmm.
and you know what type of results you'll get from it.
So what we're talking about when we talk about quality management is a way of documenting what you're doing, testing what you're doing, listening to the results, and improving the process over and over again.
Yes.
To make sure either that it stays where it needs to be, or if there's a problem, you identify it quick before it leaves, and you can prevent it from happening again.
One of the most critical parts of the quality management system is that you have a process in place that identifies abnormal behavior. Now, when we say abnormal, we mean both bad and good. This is something good happens. You don't want to say, well, oh, we're just lucky today. You mm-hmm. want to say, ooh, why were we good? Let's find out why.
Yes.
And we'll institutionalize that to make it a best practice.
Right. So how do we do that? What would you do differently? So Cheerios, we know. Let me review for those who may not have heard the first podcast. What we know about their testing process is that their cycle is a day. So they count all the boxes produced in a day for one kind of Cheerios as a lot. That's about 100,000 boxes. And from each hour, they pull a box. So you should have 24 boxes. They only test 12 to 18 of those. So they take a sample from each of those 12 to 18 boxes. They put them in a pot together and grind them up. And then they grind them some more. And then they pull 12 samples from that communal pot and they test those. And then they assess both. That's how they get their range and that's how they get their average. They never test the individual boxes. At least to date, documented, there's no record that they are doing this.
So what they end up with is sort of a big mangled average mess.
Mm-hmm. Which for them is what matters. I mean, they're looking at the process from a global perspective here,
yes.
a macro perspective. But we experience the product on a day-to-day perspective, on a box-by-box
yes.
perspective. So,
and you want to know that that box is going to be safe.
How do we do that?
What I would do if I was General Mills and I was designing their quality control system for this, first of all, is I would start doing some testing on a larger basis,
mm-hmm.
you know, either for a lot.
Yes.
And actually, with them, with the type of system they're doing, I would at least start with probably an hourly sample,
mm-hmm.
Pulling some out, finding the mean, finding the range,
mm-hmm.
and plotting that. And
now, when you said a larger sample, we discussed in our previous episode that while General Mills is pulling 12 to 18 for mm-hmm. 100,000 boxes, the industry standard is much higher. According to industry standards, you should be pulling 200 boxes for a very established process that you know is very safe, 500 for one that's kind of average, and if your process is new or has problems, you should be pulling 800 out of those 100,000 boxes.
Well, and if we, let's say for just for the sake of argument here, that they're doing about 4,000 boxes an hour.
Mm-hmm.
When you're starting out, I want to be able to very accurately describe what that process is doing. So I probably, on an hourly basis, out of the 4,000 boxes, I would probably pick somewhere between 80 to 300.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere around there, probably 80. That'd be a start, because that's kind of a low, but mm-hmm. you're just gathering data is all you're doing.
And that really depends on what else you know. If you've tested the ingredients on the way in or before mm-hmm. they've been certified, then yeah, you can probably pull fewer. But
yes, and this is actually done at each stage is mm-hmm. what you have to do. And as soon as you validate one stage of your process, mm-hmm. then you can reduce the testing requirements because okay. you know how it's going to behave.
So we pull, say, 80 boxes.
Say
and
80
what do we
boxes
do with those
hour?
Boxes?
I would sample each box, test each box individually, mm-hmm. then take the average of all of those samples,
mm-hmm.
and that would be the average I would use. Then I'd also have the range of all those samples, so I could start figuring out what my statistical process control charts are like, mm-hmm. how the process behaves. And as you do that over time, you're going to start seeing variation. That's when you have to investigate and see why are you having variation. What's causing the variation?
Mm-hmm.
It could be something as simple as, you know, well, like in the silicon chip industry, they found out that if a man goes to the bathroom and doesn't wash his hands, he can introduce a contamination. Well, the same type of thing can happen mm-hmm. in food manufacturing.
Oh,
someone
yes.
go and have a sandwich for lunch. Mm-hmm. They don't wash their hands. They can have carry gluten mm-hmm. into the process.
Or literally, they could have a crumb in their hair or on their face that falls in, and that's enough.
That's true. So what you do is you basically want to find the problems mm-hmm. as soon as you can.
Yes.
And that means the sooner you test, the sooner you can find out.
Mm-hmm.
As you go through there, you'll start learning how to eliminate those sources of variation.
Mm-hmm.
As you reduce variation, you produce a more uniform product,
yep.
which means you get to the point where you can start predicting and saying, yes, I know every box is good because mm-hmm. my process is in control.
Yes.
I know what type of variation I have. Mm-hmm. I know that the probability of a bad box is mm-hmm. you know, 1 in 100,000 or whatever.
Well, and that's what I find really interesting, is what you're describing is a system that is based on testing boxes, not the entire lot. You determine if the lot is safe by testing individual boxes, but Cheerio's current system doesn't do that.
Well, that's the final test.
Yes.
I also said you test the other parts of the
course.
System to validate those parts of the system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't wait until the very end to do your testing, because
absolutely.
If you do, you produce mm-hmm. junk if you have any bad right. stuff in it, and you just have to throw it away. If you identify the bad stuff in the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
you can eliminate it, and it doesn't get into your process. This is the red beet experiment that
yes.
Deming talked
yes,
about.
Yes, it is.
If you don't introduce wheat flour into your process, hallelujah.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a possibility of that, you need to identify that as soon as possible so you can
yes.
eliminate it.
Yes. And so, I mean, there are obviously a lot of breakdowns in the system. And what you're describing, though, is pretty much the industry best practice. Most of the companies that I, as a consumer whose child's life relies on gluten-free food, I purchase from companies that I know use safe practices like that and have mm-hmm. a history of doing it. Let's talk some about why Cheerios or in General Mills, went to this other system. I mean, there are a lot of theories. Obviously, we don't know exactly why it happened. But one of my concerns is that, from what I understand, again, information is sketchy online, but Cheerios says that they spent several months doing this testing process before they started labeling boxes as gluten-free.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a few months isn't a long time for a sample, especially if you're using days as your lots. But also, one of my questions is, particularly since there was a problem. I mean, their rail system failed. Mm-hmm. They had to move the bags. When there's an upset to the process, especially at the very beginning of producing something, why would the pressure to launch when they did? What was the timing? That's one of the questions we would ask coming in is, what assumptions helped shape this process? Was there an assumption that they had to launch before the big cereal sales, before school? Was there an assumption put in that, hey guys, we need our testing budget to be less than this so it doesn't cut into profit margins? Is that what led to a procedure? Or was it more a, hey guys, this is what works in our other processes, so we can use that here? I know as a gluten-free consumer, what I see is a lot of choices that if only one of them had occurred within a differently designed system, it would have been okay. But a lot of the choices they made are at the lower end of the boundary. And cumulatively, that's, for instance, their testing procedure might work for certified gluten-free oats. But we're not sure it's working for oats in a completely new process.
There's a lot of issues that are possible here. Explanations for it. But I'm reminded, I once took a submarine design course from Captain Harry Jackson, who was like the foremost American submarine designer of the 20th century. Most of the modern submarines are based on his work, starting way back with the, in the 50s and the 60s and so on. And one part of that course that I remember particularly is he saying that if someone's going to die, there has to be three mistakes. No one mistake is enough to hurt somebody. And I think what you have here with Cheerios is a cultural problem based on the fact that, one, they're a for-profit company.
Yes.
They have to make a profit. That's the guiding rule. In fact, they just got done canceling,
they actually had a Cheerios, I think it was about a year ago, they launched a gluten-free oatmeal. I think it was Chex Oatmeal, which they just announced they won't be producing anymore. They're not going to use.
Because it's not profitable.
Well, for multiple reasons. One, there are so many gluten-free oatmeals on the market that are amazing. We know and we trust. And so their flavors were interesting. I mean, that's fine. But, I mean, actually, they even weren't. I think they had apple cinnamon and a couple others. But it wasn't profitable. If I understand correctly, don't quote me on this, they were using gluten-free oats. But it just wasn't profitable enough. People weren't buying it. It wasn't competitive in the market, so they aren't doing it anymore.
That's the number one rule in a for-profit company like General Mills is, does it make money? I love something that Philip Crosby once said. He said, you know, when in all the management meetings he was ever in, you know, they talked about making money, not losing money. There may have been a third item, but he doesn't ever remember getting to it. Because that's what the companies have to focus on. That's what they're driven by. It's profit. So that is always a big issue. You always want to reduce costs. And you're always asking your people, how can we reduce cost or increase profit? In this case, you probably had a big push saying, hey, this is going to be a big thing. There's a big market there. People want gluten-free. We can do it. Let's go and do it. And, hey, it should be simple. But no one went through and considered what the risks were.
Or if they did, I mean, I'm sure that they considered risks, but I'm not sure those were given priority. And I'm saying, as a consumer and a quality professional looking at the system, I don't see safety being a priority here because there are so many choices that counter industry standards for safety.
I would probably change the way I said that.
Please,
would say that they assumed that safety was a given. And if you assume that, then you assume that what you're doing is going to be safe. Not realizing that you're dealing with a special population here, the celiacs, which requires such low levels of gluten. If you get a little bit of gluten in there, it's not a big problem for most people.
This is very different from other ingredient contamination issues. It's very different.
It's the difference between dealing with, I'd say, like just general compounds and whatnot, and dealing with pharmaceutical compounds.
It is.
The degree of purity that's required is so much higher, it requires special training.
Yes.
Very likely, General Mills didn't consider what was going to be special about this. And as a result, they kind of probably used their existing processes, figuring that was going to be good enough.
Well, and I think there are also some assumptions at place here. And I want to quote directly from General Mills' blog post from back in July as they were launching this product, where they talk about their stringent testing at all stages of the production of the separated oats, the oat flour made from those oats, and the cereal was also a critical part of the project. They say, as a result, each box meets and exceeds the FDA gluten-free threshold of having less than 20 parts per million of gluten in order to be labeled gluten-free. Somewhere along the line, someone made an assumption that if we test in this composite way, mixing everything together, every box will be safe. But every box isn't. The test doesn't match the statement.
But you see this behavior in many places. The Challenger was a great example. The engineers knew. I mean, the people who were actually down there doing the testing knew that what they were testing wasn't an accurate picture. They probably have an accurate picture of it. When they're testing. They had the data and everything else.
Right.
By the time it gets up to the people who write the blog post, it was, hey, we're below 20 parts per million. Yay, we're good. So you have this assumption, and you don't have the complete picture being painted, so people don't fully understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I can see that happening right now with the PR response, which keeps focusing on, no, there wasn't a problem with our testing. Well, everyone in the not everyone, but a huge portion of the gluten-free community knows there are issues with the testing. So there is a disconnect here for everything.
Yes.
Which I think adds to the issues of a giant corporation with tons of products, multiple facilities, making a shift to a completely new process that requires a huge amount of resources, a huge amount of education beyond just the basics.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know exactly the degree to which that happened.
I would say that successful organizations that have made this type of shift have usually done it on a different basis. In the military, we would form like a tiger team is what mm-hmm. we would call it. It'd be a special team. They'd go off and create whatever it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of in isolation from everyone else, starting with a clean sheet of paper, figuring out, hey, what right. resources do we have? How can we do this so it does what we want it to do? Here, it seems like they took what they already had and said, hey, we're just going to use it. And they said, oh, well, we got to clean it. Okay, well, we'll clean it.
I want to add that the engineer who designed this process has a child who is celiac, and he was leading the charge on this. So we aren't saying that anyone here was trying to make children sick or anyone sick at all. Best of intentions all around. But the assumption
But
is
the assumptions
continuing.
Always are mm-hmm. that, hey, what I'm doing is going to work. And I know from, for example, the lectures I have gotten from you about cleaning things.
Mm-hmm. It's huge.
To prevent gluten being a contamination. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy thing to do.
It isn't. It's all-consuming. It is incredibly difficult. And it's hard. You don't even realize all the ways things can come into a system.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have those. And then, but people assume the best.
Mm-hmm.
They say, hey, if I clean this, it's going to be good enough. Well, it may not be. How do you mm-hmm. know that it's good enough?
Yes. Finally, that's what it comes down to. It's not just, we don't want Cheerios to know it's good enough. The consumer has to know it's good enough. And right now, the whole process is in doubt, which is really a cautionary tale to anyone who's looking to capitalize on a market, even with the best of intentions, mm-hmm. that if you don't take the time and effort to truly understand and listen to your community, the community you're trying to convince to give you dollars, then it's not just that they're going to not trust you. It's that they are the experts. I mean, I defy you to find anyone at Cheerios who is a greater expert on celiac disease than the people who are leading the gluten-free community right now.
Now, and General Mills.
Exactly. And not just one source. It has to be from multiple, because they did partner with a celiac organization. However, a lot of consumers were giving feedback that was a concern. You've got to listen to the experts on the market you're trying to fill into, and that includes the people within that market. And yes. that is how you win trust, particularly on such a large scale with such a hasty rollout. And I'm going to remind everyone, again, my daughter got sick from this. I have some strong feelings right now. I have some really strong feelings, but I'm trying very hard to balance that line between professional and parent right now. This is the result, and I'll tell you right now, the result is a host of consumers who are angry, who are hurt, who not only are upset that they were put in danger and risk, but also feel extremely exploited, not listened to, and trod over.
Yes.
We don't want to be plowed over. We trust our experts. We trust science, and we would really like our food manufacturers to do the same. But
yes.
We also don't just blame Cheerios in this case. We're looking at the FDA and the other systems that make this possible. Because when you get down to it, General Mills was functioning within a system for gluten-free foods set up by a regulatory body. And many of the assumptions of that regulatory body are considered flawed by the people who deal with it all the time.
Well, another big problem with all this is the time delay
mm-hmm.
in discovering the problem then reacting to the problem,
Two
even the FDA.
Months. I want to. That's what I have questions as a consumer. When did they know that those lots weren't tested? When did they find out that happened? When did they know that there was wheat flour in the system? When did they know that people were getting sick? When did they decide to make the recall? Why? These are really important questions for us.
Those sound like the same questions we heard about Watergate.
Yes.
All these many years ago.
Exactly. And that's the thing is I'm not even concerned that wheat flour was introduced into the system. I mean, that's not my primary concern here. It happens. It's happened to other organizations. I'm a quality professional. I know that these things happen. However, I'm concerned that it took them 2 months to realize they hadn't tested the samples. I am concerned that it took them 2 months to disclose that they hadn't tested the samples. If they knew months ago, if they knew even days, weeks ago, Why didn't they immediately do it? Why did they wait to pull boxes and test them themselves? How do they know for sure 2 months ago it was wheat flour that got into the system? How do we know for sure?
Very good questions.
Yes. Thanks for listening. Hi, everyone. It's Meredith. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, you can get more crisis management and prevention tips and strategies for free at our website, www.me2-solutions.com. That's www.me2-solutions.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for ME2 space solutions, and you should find our profile. You can also find me on Twitter under my handle, The Quality Girl. Thanks for listening.
Copyright 2014 by Hutchison Solutions, LLC. All rights reserved. But now, seriously, folks, no part of this podcast may be reproduced in whole or part without our permission. But we'll be happy to give it to you. Just fire us an email, which you can find on our website. Thank you.